Morning, today's daf in Nida Samech Aleph. We're on Samech Amud Beis. We're starting this morning at the Mishnah. Shalosh Nashim Shayosh Yishenos Bemita Achas. So the Mishnah starts off, opens up with a scenario where three women are in one bed. Benimsa Dam Tachas Achas Mehem. And blood is found under one of them. Kulam Tameh, so they're all going to be Tameh. You know, we don't know who was the generator of that blood. Could have been any one of those three women. And in the bed, we're not exactly sure how to assign whose spot belongs to whom, and so therefore they're all going to be Tameos. We'll talk more about this scenario a little bit later on this morning. Batcha achas mehem v'nimsas tamea. But let's say one of them does a bedika. Now, what kind of interval are we talking about? Later that morning? So again, that's going to be clarified also in just a moment in terms of the interval of time. But Let's then just say the Mishnah simply. So he tameh v'shtem taharos. So under those circumstances where one of them does a bedika and discovers that she is in fact herself is in fact a nida. So that means to say now that blood that was discovered over the course of the night she can attribute to herself, and that means the other two are going to be taharos. Yeah, we need more details over here. We're going to get more details as we get to the Gemara. V'tolo zubazu. And then the Mishnah goes on to describe that they can be tola one on another. Now, exactly what does that mean? So, again, I'm going to wait, and I'm going to ask that we wait till the Gemara, because the Gemara is going to explain what exactly that means. And let's say they were not ruin liros, meaning they were too young, they were too mature, and they couldn't at this point in time have discharged blood. So we look at them as if they could see. And again, that also needs clarification, and we're going to do that as well. We'll clarify that line of the Mishnah a little bit later on. Much of the Mishnah needs to be explained. So as we go through the Gemara is going to be doing a lot of that explanation. So I'm reviewed on Rav who Shabbat got my kishir vest. Okay, so first of all, okay, the first case of the Mishnah is pretty straightforward. Not much clarification needs to be done. First case of the Mishnah, you have three women, they're in a bed. We'll later this morning, we'll explain that they're really close to one another, maybe even overlapping one another. But in other words, we don't know who to attribute the blood to. So blood's discovered under one of them. But it was at night, they were sleeping, they were really close to one another. We don't know who it came from, so therefore we have to suspect that that any one of those three generated the blood, and therefore they're all going to be tomatoes. That's the first case of the Mishnah. Doesn't really need clarification. What's the second case of the Mishnah? One of them does a bedika. One of them does a bedika, and so she could say, okay, so that kesa must belong to me because I'm a nida. You know what you can also say? You can also say that the kesem came from another one of the women, and she happened to have been paras nida. She happened to have started her menstrual cycle right before she did her bedika. So just because she did a bedika and discovered that she's a nida, does that necessarily mean that the kesem belongs to her? Yeah, it's true. You can have a stronger suspicion that belongs to her, but it doesn't mean that it belongs to her. And that's where the Gemara opens up. The Gemara opens up with a qualifying statement to Rabbi Yehuda Merav, which is v'hu shabat ka'atzma b'shir vest. That we're talking about a scenario where she did a bedika immediately. Now, immediately, I guess we mean from the discovery of the kesem to now where she does a bedika, and there is really no interval of time. Shir vest, we've discussed numerous times throughout our masech. The shir vest means that you did so immediately. Let's say, for example, the man and woman have relations, and then she does a bedika immediately after the relation. So if we talk about immediacy, mamash, there's no interval of time between the two. So that means to say, and the Gemara is about to talk about the scenario. So that means to say now that he was bal nida, even though the examination was done afterwards, but because it was done with immediacy, so therefore we assume that not only was she bal nida at the, not only was she a nida immediately after bal nida, but even during Be'ilas as well. Here too, in our Mishnah, Rav Yehuda Merav says the same thing. They wake up in the morning, they discover a kesem, and upon discovery, immediately she does the bedika, she discovers she's a nida. So now, then, and only then, can you attribute the kesem to that woman, and the other two women are going to be tahara. So that's the qualifying statement of Rav Yehuda Merav. The Gemara continues, Savala Kabar Pada. Now, in order to entertain this position, he has to be holding like Bar Pada, and the Gemara gives more explanation. Bar Pada says the following. Now, Bar Pada makes the following link. We already know that we talk about doing a bedika, we talk about interval of time. So we know that there are three intervals of time. There is shir vest, which is immediate, and then there's a little bit afterwards, that's la'achar, and then there's a little bit afterwards as well, it's la'achar, la'achar. Okay, sorry for being non-specific in terms of an interval of time, but those are the three shiurim. We, earlier in our Masechta, try to give measurements to these various units of time. So immediately, we know exactly what immediately means. The Gemara said it earlier. Gemara said it very graphically in terms of what immediately means. But for our purposes right now, we could just simply say immediately afterwards. That's Kishir Vest. What about the time after that middle interval? So that middle interval, the Gemara earlier described as the amount of time it takes her to get off her bed in order to get her cloth, in order to do an examination. That's the middle stage. Anything after that is called La'achar Achar. Now, what Barpada does is make the following linkage. Kol shebala b'chatas tarasa tameos. So, if her husband were to bring a carbon chatas, meaning that she and her husband had relations, and immediately after having had relations, she did a bedika, and she discovered herself to be a nida. So that means to say that we're going to say that they were, that the two of them engaged in relations while she was a nida. And we're assuming, of course, that was done b'shogeg. And so therefore, they have to both bring a carbon chatas. So if that's the interval of time immediately, so then the state, then any taharas that she would work with would be tame. Meaning, we're not talking about having relations, we're just simply talking about she was handling taharos, and immediately after separating from the taharos, she did a bedika, and she discovered she's a nida. And now, even though it's after she handled the taharos, but nevertheless, that immediacy is going to now allow us to conclude that the taharos, when she touched them, even though it was a moment earlier, she was also nida, and therefore they're going to be tummy. Not tummy mi safik, tummy mi vadai. That's one. Two, bala bashim tali tarasav tuluyos. If we're in this middle interval stage, so where her husband would have to bring a carbon asham, so an asham talui. So then, if we took the same interval of time and used it for the separation between when she handled taharos and when she did a bedika. So the taharos are tummy, but not mi vadai, but rather mi safik. Meaning that if it's truma, for example, so you're not going to eat it, but you're not going to burn it. And you'll just let it sit around. And finally, bala pater, tarasav taharos. Now, if her husband is pater, meaning her husband's not chayv any carbon whatsoever, not a carbon chatos, but not an asham talui, so then taharosav taharos. So then the taharos would in fact be a tar legamri. And Rashi, of course, over here is bothered by the fact that what about Me'isa Eis? What about the retroactive 24 hours that we discussed earlier? And Rashi addresses that because obviously that requires more of a hesber. Anyway, there must have been no hargasha. Now, the Gemara in a moment is going to point out that there's a big difference between the case of her having relations with her husband and her handling Tahara. So it's obviously a big difference. And the Gemara is going to point that out. It's funny you say that. The Gemara's Lashon always is focusing on him, but in Achanami, it'd be both of them. They both were involved in an Aver B'shogeg. Okay. Rabbi Oshi Amar, Afila Bala Bechatas Tarasav Tuluyos. Now, Rav Oshia says, look, even if the Bedika was done immediately, in the case of Taharos, we're not saying that the Taharos are for sure Tame. We can't say definitively that she was a nida before having done the bedika. She didn't have argasha. She didn't sense that the dam was coming out beforehand. And so, no. So Rav Oshia disagrees on the first point of Barpada. Now, the Gemara says, Bishlam ahasam eimar shamash akve ladam. Avahache misa davidam man akve. And Rav Oshia seems to be making a really strong point. And that is, in the case of Tashmish, so you understand that there was dam over there, but at the time of relations between husband and wife, so obviously it prevented the blood from coming out, but it was there. And Haraya, the moment that they finished, so she did a bedika and there was dam. So there's a very good explanation in terms of why it is that dam didn't come out during Tashmish. But over here, what was to prevent the blood from coming out earlier, a moment earlier? So yes, it's a chance that it came out earlier, but there's also a chance that it didn't come out earlier. And over here, you had nothing preventing the blood from coming out. So Rav Oshi says the cases are not the same. Now, I'm Rav Yirmiyah Mashal Rav Yoshi Lama Davidama. Now, as if we didn't fully understand Rav Oshi's point, because I think Rav Oshi's point is pretty salient, but the Gemara says, I'm going to give you a couple of analogies so just to help you understand Rav Oshi's point. So analogy number one. So you have an older man who walks at a slower pace, and you have a young man who walks at a quicker pace, but they're walking and they're on the road, and they're not in town yet. So what the younger man does is he slows down his pace because he wants to walk with the older man. He wants to accompany him, protect him, etc., etc. But then once they get into town and now they're in a secure location, so now the young man is going to start running out. And that's the analogy. So in other words, when something's holding you back, you're going to slow down. But then when nothing's holding you back, you're going to speed up. Okay. I'm not really sure what we gain from that analogy. I think we got the basic point. And Abaye, and Abaye says, wait, we're not done yet. Here comes another analogy. Analogy number two, you stick your finger in your eye. Now your eye is going to want to tear, but right now your finger's in your eye, so it's going to not tear. But then when you remove your finger, your eye starts tearing. Okay, and again, I'm not really sure what we gained by this analogy. It's the same thing regarding Tashmish. While the husband and wife are engaged in relation, so the blood now has something preventing it from coming out. But once they finish, then the blood's going to come out. Okay, I'm kind of with you. I don't fully understand what these analogies provided for us. But anyway, Tola Zubazu, we're up to the next part of the Mishnah. Okay, next part of the Mishnah, this is now going to be the third point of the Mishnah, had something to do with, and they're going to blame one another. What does that mean? So once we go through this brisa that we're about to learn together, we're going to understand a lot better what that brisa means. Tana Rabbanan. Ketzad Tola Zubazu. So the brisa asked a question, which begs asking. What does that mean? So Ubra Vishena Ubra. So let's say you had two women in the bed. One of them was pregnant, and the other one was not pregnant. So Tola Ubra Vishena Ubra. So now the one who was pregnant can say, okay, look, chances, I'm Misulekis Damim. Chances of me being the discharger of that blood really minimal. And there's another woman in the bed, and she's not a muberis, so it's probably hers. Another example, minika v'sheina minika, tola minika v'sheina minika. Nursing and non-nursing woman sleeping in the same bed. Again, nursing woman is musulek is damim. So she could basically say, look, it's not me, right? I'm in a state of life right now where I'm musulek is damim. It belongs to the one who's not nursing. Zekena v'sheina zekena. Tola zekena v'sheina zekena. Woman who experienced menopause, sleeping in the bed with a woman who is still young. So under those circumstances, again, same thing. The Zekena says that the blood didn't come from me. Basula Vishena Basula, Tola Basula Vishena Basula. Basula over here probably means Basula, meaning she didn't start menstruating yet. And she's together in bed with an Aina Basula, a woman who started menstruating. So again, same story. The Basula said the blood didn't come from me, I didn't start menstruating yet. Hayushem Obra Shame and Niko Shame Zekena Shame Basulos. However, if everything is equal, and in other words, in that same bed together, you have two women, and both of them are musulak as damim. Okay, so look, I know they both have very strong arguments that it wasn't them, but it had to have been somebody. Meaning, after they slept the night in the bed, there was a kesem discovered on the sheet in the bed. So zui shishanin la yu ruuyos roen osoki ilu hein ruuyos. And now you understand the last line of the Mishnah. The last line of the Mishnah says, and if they are not ruuyos, if they're not really ones who should be discharging, right? They're nursing, they're pregnant, they experience menopause, they haven't started menstruating yet. They shouldn't be, but if everyone else in the bed is the same state they are, so now we're all playing on the same level field. There is a kesem. We don't know who it belongs to. Okay. It's got to be somebody's.
What's the song? They're both liable?
Yeah, and they both would be tummy. And then we go back to the beginning of the Mishnah, and they would both be tomatoes. We're on Samach Aleph Amud Aleph on top of the Amud. Shalosh Nashim Shehayu Yishenos Bemita Achas. Now, I know this sounds very familiar because if you look back at the previous Mishnah, that's exactly the case that we started off this morning, right? The Shalosh Nashim Shayushins Bemita Achas. And here we go again. Three women in the same bed. So V'nimsa Dam Tachas Haim Tzais. So here now, the Mishnah is going to confuse us. And the Gemara recognizes that. Because that Mishnah is going to talk about where the blood was discovered on the bed, where was the positioning of each of these women. Now, in the previous Mishnah, we didn't have any regard to where the stain was, where the women were, and over here the Mishnah starts really parsing. So obviously it's all confusing, and the Gemara obviously recognizes that, and the Gemara is going to clarify. So I'm going to learn the Mishnah right now, ignoring what we learned previously, and then afterwards we'll try to synthesize our Mishnah and the previous Mishnah. Shalosh nashim shayu yishenos bemita achas. So there were three women in the bed, v'nimsa dam tachas haim tzais. And now blood was discovered on the emtzais, in the middle woman. So kulam tameos, so they're all going to be tame, meaning because each woman now is only one woman's length away from the stain, and so now attribution could be given to any one of those women. Tachas apanimis, however, if it's in the interior woman. Now when we say interior, so I guess and Rashi sets it up that we're talking about a bed that's flush against the wall. So that means to say that to get into the bed now, So you're going to go up the bed, either from the base of the bed, from the quote-unquote legs of the bed, or you're going to go from the side of the bed. And obviously that's really important. So, but for now, and we're going to come back to that in a moment, but for now, however, there's someone sleeping on the most interior, meaning right up against the wall. Then obviously you have the middle woman, and you have the woman at the edge of the bed. So, if the kesem was found under the penimius, the most interior woman, so shtam penimius tameh v'achitzona tahara. So now the penimius are going to be tameh, meaning the woman who the kesem is directly under, and the woman right next to her, the woman in the middle. Again, if you're only one woman's length away from the kesem, so the assumption is that you could also be a candidate for the one who discharged that blood. But the woman all the way at the end, she's too far away. Now, tachas achitzona, just give me a second. Let me first finish the Mishnah. I will for sure pause. So, v'chitzona tahara, tachas achitzona. Now, if it's underneath a woman who's all the way at the end of the bed, meaning furthest from the wall, so achitzona tamea v'apanimis tahara. So, the v'chitzonos, the ones who are at the end of the bed, meaning the one who's most end, and even the one in the middle, so she, they're both going to be tamea, and the panimis and the one in the interior are going to be tahara. Now, the Mishnah itself clarifies. We're only going to say this if when they went up to the bed, they went up from the base of the bed, from the legs of the bed. Meaning no one had to go over another person's spot in order to get to their spot. However, if they came up the bed, meaning that they came from the side of the bed, and then one woman, in order to get to her interior spot, had to go over positions 1, 2, in order to get to her position number 3. And the one who was in the middle had to go over position 1 to get to her spot. And the one that sat in the end, so every one of them went over position number 1. And so under those circumstances, so now, I know it's funny because it's only just a short amount of time that the woman who was in the 3 spot went over the 1 spot. It's a little bit strange that it was just to get to her spot. So you're talking about really a short amount of time. But still, the Mishnah says under those circumstances, all of them are going to be Tameos if I found the Kesem on the Chitzona spot. Right, correct. I agree with you. If the kesem was found on the interior spot, I agree. Now, again, the Mishnah reminds us, as if we didn't remember from the previous Mishnah, the Mishnah reminds us that if one of them does a bedika and she finds herself tahora, so sorry, this is different than the previous Mishnah. Right. In other words, the bedika was done by one of them, and she discovers herself to be tahara. He tahara v'shaim tameos. So now she is going to be tahara. The other two are going to be tameos. But gushtaim umatzu taharos. Now let's say two of these women did a bedika immediately after discovery. Two of them discovered themselves to be tahara. So hein taharos v'shlishis tameos. So then the two of them are going to be tahara, and the third one who didn't do bedika, she's going to be tamea. Shlosh tamatzu taharos. So let's say all three of them did a bedika, and all three of them checked out. No, it wasn't me. Well, you can't have three people saying it wasn't you. Right? In other words, you had three women in the bed. There was a kesem underneath. So, look, it's, you know, everyone did a bedika, I understand, and everyone's bedika checked out. But at the same time, however, there is a kesem in the bed. So, kulam tameos, so the Mishnah says they're all going to be tame, and lamaha davadoma. And let's get an analogy over here in order to give us an understanding of why that should be. Alagal tamish in itarib ben shnei galim tahorim. So, you had a mound that was tame, meaning a pile of rocks where we know we have a mesora that there was tuma underneath the pile of rocks, and then there were two more piles of rocks. Somebody just introduced, hey, you know what? That pile of rocks needs companionship. So two more piles of rocks were placed right next to it, and now we don't know which one was the original, which ones are the new ones. Okay, we don't know. Ubat garchas mehem umatzu taru taru shem tameim. And so here now we're going to go through the same format. You do a bedika. So you do bedika on one of the rocks, meaning you unearth the dirt underneath, and it turns out to be tahor. Fine, that one area is tahor. Where is the mace right now? The other two. I don't know which one, but one of those other two. Shnaim umatsu taharim heim taharim shlishitame. We did a bedika on three. On two. Got ahead of myself. On two, and they checked out. Okay, so now I know where the tuma is on the one where we didn't do an examination. Ushloshtam. Shnayim matzu taharim, heim taharim v'shlishi tamei. Shloshtam umatzu taharim. Let's say you do bedika on all three. There's no mace. We looked for it. We couldn't find it. Kulan tameos. So they're all going to be tamei. We know we have a mesora that there was tuma under one of them. And now two more were added. And I don't know which one was the original. It's like the shell game. and I don't know which one. I don't know which one's the original. And we did a bedika under each one of them, and I couldn't find it. Okay, and so unfortunately, you couldn't find it. It was there, and so somebody has to be attributed to it. So divrei Reb Meir. So according to Reb Meir, all three are going to be tamei. Shear Meir Omer called Davishu becheskes tuma lolam hu betuma aso ad sheivad alecha tuma hechan hu. So now Reb Meir says, look, it was there. So now you can't find it. That's unfortunate. We are not changing a chazaka until you positively identify where the tumah went. Otherwise, we assume that the tumah is still there. I know you did a bedikah. I know you tell me it's not there, but it's there. And yes, I know you could certainly connect this with Reb Meir, who throughout Shas Lishi Tasso is choshesh lemiyuta. He's always worried about the minority, that small chance that something happened. So yes, this could be Reb Meir being consistent with his position of chashash lemiyuta. But the chachamim omrim bo de gashem agila sel ola besula, and the chachamim say no, you just do a bedika. You do a bedika until you get to hard bedrock or until you get to virgin soil, and that's it. And you can't find it. Okay, you can't find it means it's not there anymore. We had a mesorah that was there. Okay, we had a mesorah that's not there. We did a bedika. We got to either bedrock or to virgin soil. The tumah's not there anymore. Okay.
The whole analogy is only for the chachamim because otherwise there's no point.
It's the same case. And not only that, but we can obviously make a distinction between the cases, which we're going to do a little bit later on. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kesem
is a dam.
Is that a small round spot, or is it a small?
No, it's the larger. It's larger than a gris. In other words, it's a spot of blood that was discovered in the bed. If there was a hargasha, then the woman who had the hargasha would know that belongs to her. There was no hargasha. No, it was a discharge of blood.
More than a
gris. Doesn't seem that way. Okay. We start with the Gemara Maishan and Reisha. Maishan and Reisha de lo maflik and Maishan sefa de kamaflik. Okay, so now the Gemara says, look, let's try to synthesize our Mishnayos. We started a Mishnah this morning on Samach Hamad Beis, had the same scenario, three women in a bed, and v'nimsa dam tachas achas mehem, blood was discovered under one of them. So kulan and tomatoes. The Mishnah says they're all tamei. And now our Mishnah, on the top of Samach Aleph and Aleph, same scenario, and now there's a difference where Panemius, Chitzonius, how they get up onto the bed. There's a lot. What's going on? Why in the previous Mishnah did we not seem to care the positioning? And over here in our Mishnah, we cared about the positioning. Right? The Gemara gives a very quick answer. The Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Ami b'mishu la vos. Take a look at Rashi over here. We'll learn the Rashi inside. Amar Rabbi Ami Reisha b'mishula vos. So it's kufos u'devukos yachad. So the women were sleeping in the previous Mishnah, and they were next to one another. Now, next to one another, right, intermingled maybe, intertangled with one another. Hilkach chafilu nimsa tachas apinimis ikalus fuke nami b'chitzona. So because of the positioning of how the woman slept in the bed, so therefore we can't separate and say, well, where the custom is going to be discovered is going to be symbolic of or predictive of the fact that it probably came from that woman or maybe the woman right next to her. Because they were tkufos, because they were so close to one another, so therefore we can't make we literally can't separate them and say which one belongs to which blood. And our Mishnah on the top of our Amud, so we're talking about a case where they had clear spots in the bed in terms of where they slept. The Gemara continues, Batka Achas, Lama Lemisna Lamazadomer. So the Gemara asks basically Phil's question. What did we gain by the analogy? Okay, in our scenario, we had three women in a bed. There was a kesem underneath. One did a bedika, she's tahora. Two did a bedika, discovered they're good, they're tahoros. Three did a bedika, so the kesem came from somebody, so they're all tomatoes. Fine. And then we do go through the same analogy with the pile of stones, and it's the same, isn't it? So hachi kamalu Reb Meir l'Rabbanan. So the Gemara says, well, no. Actually, there is dialogue going on in the Mishnah. We just didn't understand that it was dialogue. But now we're going to understand. Rav Meir was talking to the Chachamim. Maishna bedam de lo pligisu, or maishna begal de pligisu. And so, you don't argue with me in the case of the galos, and in the case of the stones, and meanwhile, you're arguing with me in the case of the women. V'rabban bishlamahasam ema, or if not la. So, look, in the case of the pile of stones, there was tumah there. We know that. And we have a mitzvah that there was tumah over there. Okay, but you know what? The tumah could not be there. So, very possibly, an Ariv came and took it. Elahacha haidam hechasa. But over here, there was a kesem discovered in the bed. Who does a kesem belong to? Meaning, it's there. The evidence is still there. So, obviously, it came from one of these women. That's what happened. And now it's just a question of which woman it came from. So, that's why the cases are different. Tanya Amar Amir Maisa B'Shikma Shel Kfar Sabash Ayu Machzikim Batumah. Gemara is now going to quote a Brisa. The Brisa tells the following story. Rav Meir tells a story. There was a sycamore tree in the town of Kfar Saba, and we know that there was tumah underneath. Someone buried under the tree. Now, and they did a bedika under the tree, and it seems like everything checked out. And it seems like I know there was once upon a time a mace buried underneath, but we did some digging under the tree. We couldn't find it. Now, liyamim nashva ba aruach v'akarso. And then what happens is, sometime later, a strong wind came and ripped the tree right out of its roots. And you can guess now what was discovered underneath the tree. You don't have to guess. And they found a skull buried underneath the tree. So Amar lo, so that's Rav Meir. And Rav Meir now turns to the Chachamim and says, see, right, you're telling me not to be worried. I'm telling you, you need to be worried. If we have a Mesorah that there was a mace there, and I know you're telling me you did a Bedika, but I'm telling you an incident with the tree, the sycamore tree. We did a bedika, and there was, meanwhile, there was a skull underneath. Amar lo misham raya, emar lo badku kol sarko. So the Chachamim said, look, that story is anecdotal. And I know it's a horror story. But when all said and done, we'll just simply say, if they did a good bedika, they would have found the skull underneath. They obviously didn't do a good bedika. Doesn't change our position. Tanya amar Rav Yosi maisa b'mar shel shichin. So the Gemara now tells another story where there was a cave, and we had a Mesorah that people buried in that cave. But then we're looking for remains, and they're checking all throughout the cave, and they can't find any remains, any human remains. So they came to the conclusion that everything's fine. And when they checked, by the way, they got to the point where the earth was so smooth, right? Smooth like a fingernail. And now what happened is that there was a flash flood, and the workers now had to run into this cave for protection. And they had all their tools with them. And so I'm not exactly sure what got them to start digging. Was it the flood that got them to start digging, or they were just in the mood? I'm not really sure. But the point is that all these workers in the cave with the tools, and what do you think they discovered? Umatsu machteshes maleat samos. And so they found bones, so they found human remains. And again, Rav Meir is using the story to prove his point that, I know you think Bedika was done, it doesn't mean anything. If we have a Mesorah that there was a people buried here, so we have to assume that it remains in a state of tumah. And Amrulo, and again, the Chachamim say, Misham Raya, Eim Elo Badku Kol Tzarcha. And the Chachamim say, once again, anecdotal. It's anecdotal. If they did a proper bedika, there'd be nothing to worry about. Tanya Abashol Omer Maisa Besela Beis Charon, Shai Mechaskim Botuma. So there was a stone up in Beis Charon, and we had a Mesorah that there were people buried underneath. V'lo Yachlu Chachamim Livdok Memnesha Aisa Meruba. Now it happens to be that this was a big swatch of land, and a swath of land. And the Chacham, it's just too much for to do a bedika. Vayusham Zakin Echad Rav Yeshua ben Chanan Yishmao. Amar lahem hevi elisidanim. So Rav Yeshua ben Chanan, an elder at the time, said, you know what, I know how to do a bedika under these circumstances. So he asked for a large sheet. Hevi elisidanim, many of those large sheets. Vishar an b'mayim, and he soaked them in water. Parsam alehem. And he laid the wet sheets now over the ground. Makom tahor yavesh, makom tuma lach. And the places that were free of human remains was dry. And the places that were still wet were going to be tame. Ubatku matsu. And exactly where he told them, here, dig here, dig here, dig here, and discovered exactly as he indicated. Borgado malayat samos, and they found a big pit that was filled with bones. Okay, exactly how this bedika works. So I'm not the geologist. I know I excuse myself all the time for just not knowing enough, but I don't. I'm not the geologist. I don't know why it is that the tummy earth was still wet and the tower earth was dry.
Because the earth is very hard.
Okay.
And when it rains, it doesn't go through.
Okay.
And if you dig.
I'm open to hearing. So anyway, so Tana, and fine. And again, now, so the Gemara, now this story is, I guess, proving the point of the Chachamim. Right. That if the person knows what he's doing and he's an expert and he knows how to do bedikas, you can discover it. You can find it. Tana hu aborsha mile Yishmael ben Nesanya chalalim. And the Gemara says, now this wasn't just any pit. So, and these remains were not the remains of just anyone. So these were the victims of Yishmael ben Nesanya. Dichsiv ha'bor asher hishlich, asham Yishmael es kol pigrei anashim asher hika biyad Gedalia biyad Gedalia. The Gemara quotes the pasuk in Yirmiyahu. The pasuk in Yirmiyahu is describing now the murder of Gedalia together with a number of other people that were killed with Gedalia. Now Gedalia ben Achikam, I think we're all familiar. So he was the last Jewish governor of Eretz Yisrael before the final destruction before Galus of Rome, of the second base of Mikdash. Of the first base of Mikdash, not Rome, sorry. Of Nebuchadnezzar and the first base of Mikdash. Nebuchadnezzar, after having taken Sitkiyahu and ousted him as the king, and Sitkiyahu was the last king of Malchus Yehuda, So Nebuchadnezzar appointed a Jewish governor, and that was Gedalia ben Achikam. And in two places, both in Sefer Malachim and in Sefer Yirmiyahu, Gedalia ben Achikam is described, and he was killed by Yishmael. Yishmael, who did not want some sort of puppet leader of the Babylonian government, so he killed Gedalia ben Achikam. And so and not only did he kill Gedalia ben Achikam, but he killed many others as well. So this particular pile of bones that were discovered in the stones of Beis Charon, so this were the victims of the murders of Yishmael. Now the Gemara points out that the pasuk, you read the pasuk in Yirmiyahu, it's confusing because I'm going to read the pasuk again. V'habor asher yishlich sham Yishmael es kol pigrei anashim asher huka biyad Gedalia. Well, you know who killed all these people? Gedalia killed all these people, and that's not true. In other words, Yishmael killed all these people. In fact, Gedalia was one of the victims as well. So the pasuk obviously is really strange. V'chi Gedalia hargan v'alo Yishmael hargan. Well, what does that mean? That's not true. It was Yishmael who killed all of them. Ela mitoch sh'ayel lo lachush le'itzas Yochanan mekorach v'lo chash male alav akasav ki'ilu hargan. And the Gemara has a really strong and damning statement. He said that, look, Gedalia ben Achikam was in a position where he heard rumors that Yishmael was not happy, and more than not happy, meaning was ready to take the life of Gedalia ben Achikam. And Gedalia ben Achikam basically said, look, I don't want to hear these stories about Yishmael, meaning it's rumors, it's gossip, it's Lashon Hara. I don't want to hear this. And he refused to listen. And as a result of that, so Gedalia ben Achikam was killed, and all these other people were killed. And so the Gemara assigns blame to Gedalia ben Achikam for not listening and being careful about the Lashon Hara. Now Rava says, look, lesson learned over here. When you hear Lashon Hara, so you shouldn't be accepting the Lashon Hara, but on but at the same time, however, you have to be concerned. Meaning, okay, you're right, you shouldn't, I don't accept the Lashon Hara, it's not true, it's terrible, how could you say something like that? But at the same time, however, if your life is in jeopardy because of this Lashon Hara, so it's something you should be concerned about. You can't ignore the information. From a Lashon Hara standpoint, you certainly shouldn't be passing the information on and gossiping, and et cetera, et cetera. But if it affects you, so yet you cannot, you can't just simply ignore it. Gemara tells another story. There were people up in the Galil, and rumors about them that they killed somebody. And also the comment to Rabbi Tarfon. And they went to Rabbi Tarfon, Amrulay, Litmerin and Mar. And they go to Rabbi Tarfon and said, look, we're being sought out by the government, and we need hiding. Could you hide us? And Amrulu, Hechi Navid, Ilo Atmerisu, Chazu Yasaichu, So the Gemara says, look, if I don't hide you, people are going to see you. And your lives are going to be in jeopardy. But at Marinu, Hama Rabbanan, Hailish Bisha, Afagav, De Lukabulo, Mibaye, Mechushle, Mibaye. So, but at the same time, he says to them, but look, I've heard what people have been saying about you. And if I hide you, so look, I know I'm not allowed to accept the Lashon Hara, the things I heard about you. But at the same time, however, I know I'm going to be putting my life in jeopardy if I hide you. You killed somebody, so what's going to stop you from killing somebody else? And that somebody else being me. Zilo Asun Timur Nafshaychu. And he says to them, okay, you're going to hide yourselves. Okay. Continuing the Gemara, on the bottom of Samech Aleph and Aleph, Vayamar Shema Moshe Al Tira. So Kadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, you have no need to be concerned. Mechti Sichon Va'og Achei Havu. The Amar Mar Sichon Va'og B'nei Achia Bar Sham Chazai Havu. Okay, so we have a tradition that Sichon and Og were brothers. Maishna Mi Og De Kamastafe, Maishna Mi Sichon De Lo Kamastafe. And look, I see that you're afraid from Og. I don't understand. You weren't afraid from Sichon. And you had no problem dealing with Sichon, and meanwhile, you're afraid of Og? Well, what's the difference? And they're brothers. And just like you dealt with Sichon, no problems, you're going to deal with Og the same way. I'm Rav Yochanan, I'm Rav Shimon Meyochai, Mitzvah Social, Oso Tzadik, Atayodea, Mahia Belibo. So, you know what Moshe was afraid of. And the Gemara goes on to explain. I'm Rav Shema Tamo Lo Zchus, Shal Avram Avinu. And it could very well be that it was the Zchus of Avram Avinu that he was afraid of. Meaning Og himself, in of himself, he wasn't afraid. But the fact that he came with his zechuyos, that made him scared. Shenemar vayavah palit vayah gela Avram ha'ivri. So we know towards the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, so there was somebody who escaped from battle, and he told Avram, your nephew has been kidnapped, etc., etc. Va'amar Rav Yochanan zeh og shepalat midorah mabul. And this isn't just anyone who escaped. The word palit means to escape. It wasn't just anybody, but it was Og. And Og survived the Mabul. He goes all the way back. And so what Moshe was scared about was that Og had these zechuyos that he went and he reported, and as a result of that, that's what he was afraid of. That's why he was afraid of Og as opposed to Sichon. Bottom of the Amud. Atan Rabban Beged Shava Bo Kesem. So let's say you had a Beged, and the Kesem now is lost. What does that mean it was lost? So Rashi over here points out, take a look at the Rashi in the bottom of the Amud. So Sha'avad Bo Kesem. Kigon Shenichnas B'mayim. O Niglal B'dam Behema. V'ein Yadua Makom Hanidos. V'kaimelam B'masis. And Ein Dam Hanidos Tahor. Below Shiva Samamanim. So in terms of taking Damnida and making a tower, so you need the seven chemical agents to be passed over it. Now, we haven't learned about the seven chemical agents yet. That's coming up, actually, in just a little bit from now. Let's call it tomorrow's daf. Yeah. So in tomorrow's daf, we're going to be talking about the seven chemical agents. But in the meantime, however, so I lost the kesem, and I don't know where it is. So what you're going to do is ma'avir lav shiva samimanim umavatlam. So what you do is you pass the seven chemical agents over it, and you're mevatel. Reb Shimon Elazar Omer, Bodko. So he says what you're going to do is you're going to do a bedika. Shechunos. So what you do is you do like basically bedikas spot by spot, piece by piece. And with every spot that is cleared, so now basically you can determine that that is not the area where the kesem is. Avda Boshech Vazera, so Chadash, Botko B'machat. If you lost Shech Vazera went into some article of clothing. So what's going to happen is that you're going to take a needle and you're going to pass it over. And because of the thickness of the viscosity of the Shech Vazera, so the needle is not going to be able to pass over the area where there is Shech Vazera. And if the needle passes over the whole area, so then you can be rest assured that the Zerin is no longer there. Shachuk. Now, let's say the clothing happens to be very thin clothing. So at this point in time, to run a needle over it, it's just not a good test. So Botko Bechama. So what you're going to do is that you're going to pass hold it up to the sun. And you'll see if there's any zera over there. So it's going to create an opaque area against the sun. Tana, in terms of spot checking area by area, so It has to be three etzbaos by three etzbaos. Tanu Rabbanan. Yeah. Tanu Rabbanan, Beged Shava Bo Kalayim Arizel Lo Yim Karno Lo V'Kochavim. Now let's say you have a Beged and you lost the Kalayim. So in other words, it was a wool Beged or it was a linen garment, either way. But let's start off with a wool garment. It was a wool garment and a little bit of linen now got mixed in with it. Someone threaded in linen. So what do? Well, it's actually very simple. If you can identify where the linen is, you take the linen out. Okay, and that's fine. And now it's no longer shanes. But you don't know where it is anymore. So you have a bag of shavah b'kalayim. So so you cannot sell it to a non-Jew, because what the non-Jew is then going to do is going to turn around and sell it to another Jew, and you're going to be in violation of lifnei iver. V'lo yasu mardas l'chamor, and you can't make a saddle for a donkey. Now, even though you're not warming yourself up with the saddle of the donkey, but still, midrabanan, one is not allowed to make a seat cushion with kalayim. Aval osa mimenu tachrichin l'mase. But what you can do is you can make tachrichin for a mace. Use it for death shrouds, and that would be fine. Now, before we get on to the comment of Rav Yosef, so Rashi over here writes the... Not Rashi, sorry. So Tosos over here writes, Aval osa tachrichin l'mase. Really interesting Tosos. The Aval osa tachrichin l'mase, v'kol shekinim lo avad. Now the Tosfos points out: What if you didn't you know exactly where the shanes is? Can I then use it for tachrichin? Tosfos says sure. Meaning the only scenario the Gemara is using over here is where if I lost the shanes, I use it for tachrichin. It just simply means I have no other solution. But if you know exactly where the shanes is, and for whatever reason you don't want to take it out, you could also use that for shrouds as well. Now it happens to be that once they use it for tachrich, and Tosfos points out, now it's asur bahana, and you can't sell it to a guy, etc. So Tosfos over here is bothered by a really fundamental question, and that is that of Log LaRush. We know that when you go to a cemetery and you're wearing tzitzis, you have to tuck your tzitzis in. And you can't show off your tzitzis when you're going to a cemetery. Why? So the Gemara Brachos teaches us, Tosfos here quotes the Gemara Menachos, because you're making fun of the dead. In other words, you're in a position where you could do mitzvahs, the dead is in a position where they can't do mitzvahs anymore, and it's Log LaRush, and you're mocking the dead. And so you have to tuck your tzitzis in. So Tosfos over here is asking such a wonderful question, such a powerful question, which is over here you're putting kalayim on the mace. So we just learned in our Gemara that you have kalayim and you can put him on a mace, and that's fine. And he don't worry about him. In other words, he's not chayv in mitzvos and he's not bound by the isser of kalayim, so it's fine. And Tosfos says, "What do you mean it's fine? Loig l'rush." Okay, so Tosfos is by that. It's not so. Okay, fine. So Tosfos himself is going to give an answer. So Gabi Tzitz Vayishai Tavad Ramin Lai Mishum Loig L'Rush Upirish Rashbam Dein Bo Iser Ve'afilu L'Chai Ki Hai Gavne She'in Ameis Ne Nebo. So Tosfos gives a really interesting answer, and that is that the mace currently is not violating any Iser, because the Iser is not to get warmth from the Beged. He currently right now in the state that he's in, he's not getting warmth from the Beged. And so therefore he's not violating any Isser. Tosfos says, I don't love that answer. Vekasha da tzitzis nami, enachai chayavo im einbo hana levisha. You know, the same thing is true regarding tzitzis. Meaning a beged that's chayav in tzitzis is only a beged in which you get benefit from. And so if you're not getting benefit from this, so it's not, you're not going to be chayav in, you wouldn't be chayav in tzitzis. So that same argument would allow you to wear tzitzis during in the cemetery. Okay, so Tosfos doesn't love that answer. Okay, so Rabbeinu Tam gives an answer, and I'll stop here in Tosfos, although I strongly encourage you to see the rest of this Tosfos. Rabbeinu Tam says, well, you know what? Generally speaking, the mitzvos, if you're by a mason and you're showing off mitzvos, so to say, there's generally speaking no problem. It just happens to be that tzitzis is really exciting. Tzitzis is really special. Tzitzis is equivalent to all the mitzvos in the Torah. And so because of how unique and special tzitzis is, so you go by the cemetery and your tzitzis are out, So that's offensive. But any other mitzvah, it's fine. The mace is fine. You're not mocking him by displaying any other mitzvah while you're going through the cemetery and while you're demonstrating to a mace. That's one answer. That's Rabbeinu Tam's answer. I quoted, you remember this? Not so long ago. I quoted the Gur Aryeh. Really interesting Gur Aryeh. The Maharal. So he writes that the distinction between our Gemara and the Gemara regarding tzitzis is positive commandments versus Isurim. When it comes to positive commandments, Mrs. Essay, so that is something where it really shows the unique relationship that we have to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that you're not allowed to do in front of a mace. Meaning, we're wearing tzitzis, he's not. Not tzitzis, it's a mitzvah essay, it's a positive commandment. But when it comes to lavin, when it comes to negative prohibitions, that doesn't show off any kind of special relationship. Torah says not to do anything. There's nothing inherent in the iser, it's just that we abstain because the Torah tells us not to do it. But it doesn't show any kind of unique relationship that we have to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if it's just an iser, if it's just a lav, that's fine. So the Gur Aryeh makes a distinction between the essays versus the lavim. The Gur Aryeh, so interesting. He says that's what the avos were holding by, right? The avos were holding by the essays, the positive commandments, but they weren't holding by the lavim, right? So the that's why he writes that. But Yaakov, so he married two wives. Aye, that's a lav. No, in other words, the avos weren't holding by the lavim; they were only holding by the essays. Okay. That's another approach. That's a different approach. But yeah. Anyway, that's the Maharal. I'm Rav Yosef. Let's finish up this morning with the following. I'm Rav Yosef. Zosameres mitzvos betelos lasa lavo. So now you're putting kalayim on the mace, okay? And what's going to happen? So tchias amesim is going to happen, and now he's going to wake up with tchias amesim, and he's walking around with shanes. So and that's fine. So Rav Yosef says, oh, I'll tell you what. So the conclusion is mitzvos betelos lasa lavo. So they're not going to be mitzvahs. And mitzvahs are for now. In other words, for this era of time. But then when we get to Asir Lavo, so the mitzvahs are not going to be nullig. Amalei Abay, V'item Rav Dimi, V'ham Rav Mani, Amar Rav Yana, L'shanu Ela L'savdo, Avala Kovro, Asir. So no, if you want to eulogize him with Shanez, that's fine. But to bury him in Shanez, that you can't do. Amalei L'avitmar L'am, Rav Yochanan, Afila Kovro. What do you mean? Rav Yochanan says that you're allowed to bury him in the Shanez. Not just eulogize him in the Shanez. Rav Yochanan Tamid, Rav Yochanan, my dichtiv, b'meisim chavshi, kevin shemeis adam nafshi chavshim, kevin shemeis adam naseh chavshim in mitzvos. And on that, Rav Yochanan says, look, once a person's dead, he's no longer chayv in mitzvos. And so Rav Yochanan over here being consistent that once you get to the point of misa and that you're chofish min mitzvos, so then there's no problem whatsoever. Then there would be no concern about the issue of wearing shatnez. Let's quickly recap. We did two Mishnayos this morning, both describing women sleeping in a bed together. Kesem is described underneath. In Mishnah number one, they're all Tameos. In Mishnah number two, positioning is really critical and really important. We talked about doing a Bedika immediately after the discovery. Is that Bedika going to help? If it's done immediately, it may help. Although the Gemara points out it's a Machlokas. Machlokas Amoraim, whether a Bedika done immediately after discovery is going to help. This morning, we also spoke out the Machlokas between Rav Meir and the Chachamim. You do a Bedika. So if you do a bedika, can that clear everybody? So if one or two people find themselves taharos, if one or two women find themselves to be taharos, so then that's fine, they're fine. If all three of them do a bedika and they find themselves to be taharos, but that doesn't explain how come there's a kesem in the bed. They're all going to be tameos. How is this different than the case of the gal, where you do a bedika and according to the chachamim, the bedika is going to help? So the Gemara's response is very simple. In the case of the stones where we had a misora, there was a mace under one of them, but it could very well be that the mace is no longer there. Meaning we don't see the mace over there, and it could be an orev, a raven, or any other animal took away the mace, and it could be that it's not there anymore. If we have an area which is presumed to be an area of tumah, and we do a bedika, can that bedika reset the status? So machlok is Rav Meir and the Chachamim. Rav Meir says it can never reset the status until you actually find the mace. And the Chachamim say, no, you do a bedika and you're fine. Stories were told back and forth. Really interesting gemaras that we did in the bottom of the Amud Aleph regarding Gedaliah ben Achikam and Yishmael ben Asanya. The Gemara is saying that Gedaliah ben Achikam should have not accepted the Lashon Hara, but certainly been cautious about the Lashon Hara that he heard. Okay, and then the Gemara talks about having lost a kesem, meaning you have a garment, you lost a kesem. So what do you do under those circumstances? What if you lost Shechvat Zer in a garment? And then the Gemara says, and what if you lost tachrichin in a garment? What if I lost kalaim in a garment? What do I do under those circumstances? And which generate a lot of interesting discussion in terms of you're allowed to use tachrichin for a mace. What about loig l'rush? And what about the fact that he's going to wake up Tchias Mason having wearing kalayim?